Welcome to the NCMGMA podcast, your gateway to the world of healthcare management in North Carolina. Designed for practice management professionals, our podcast delivers valuable insights, trends, and coverage of the latest happenings in North Carolina's dynamic healthcare community. This podcast is made possible with the help of our proud sponsor, ComTech. Get ready to explore, learn, and grow with us as we navigate the ever-evolving healthcare world together.
Welcome to the North Carolina MGMA podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Fogg, and I'm excited to dig into this episode's topic, AI. It's a buzzword we hear everywhere, from ChatGPT, deepfakes, and Hollywood strikes. We're trying to wrap our brains around what this technology will do to shape our world and how we can ensure the proper guardrails are in place to protect us from the doom and gloom lens James Cameron made famous with an Austrian bodybuilder in the 90s. As for AI in healthcare, well, it's here. It's doing big things in our space. And I'm really excited for our experts to share a little bit about it. I'm happy to welcome Dr. Matthew Lundgren, Chief Medical Information Officer at Microsoft Nuance, Rafe Martin, Chief Revenue Officer, Cybersecurity and Managed Services with ComTech. Between these two experts, we will discuss how AI is helping augment healthcare, what are the advantages and disadvantages of AI, the cybersecurity implications to consider, what we can expect locally in the future of AI, and how we can ensure a comfortable and confident experience with our patients, physicians, and their organizations engaging with AI. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Great. Well, we're going to just jump right in with getting started with Matt. Again, appreciate your time with this. So Matt, I want to jump in and get started and tee up this conversation with a saying from one of my favorite comedians and one of my favorite TV shows back in the day, Jerry Seinfeld and the Seinfeld Show. So Matt, what's the deal with AI in healthcare? Can you give us a broad scope on where it is right now and how you see it?
Yeah, great way to kick it off. So AI in healthcare, I think is, well, it's a very big topic, so it can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. I think that right now we're entering kind of a new phase of AI, and I think that the term is a bit overused, but in general, as we've seen the progression of the capability of machines to do things, you know, automate tasks and particularly help us with our tasks over time in all kinds of parts of our lives. There's always been a bit of a gap in how useful it can be for healthcare applications. And I think that in the recent generation of models and capabilities, we're seeing now that gap has started to close. And so, but a good way to sort of think about this is there's almost like a pre, GPT time and a post GPT time. And the reason I say that is it's sort of this transition from what we used to refer to as AI was really essentially automating very specific, narrow tasks. Maybe it's diagnosing a lung nodule on an X-ray, or maybe it's detecting sepsis. But those quote unquote AI models could really only do, one task at a time. And now we've kind of moved in from that narrow world, which again you can imagine you'd have to have thousands of different applications to really start to get at some of the big important tasks that we need, the cognitive work that we need to accomplish a lot of the healthcare applications. Now we're kind of moving into this generative, or what I would call broader scope AI. And so in this space, now you kind of look at these models as not just accomplishing one thing and that's all they can do. It's actually one model that can potentially do several different things. And that shift is actually allowing a lot of different parts of our society to benefit from the capabilities. But obviously, as we think about healthcare, we are looking at specific areas where this technology can really accelerate some of the tasks that we know we'd like to have automated as part of the clinical workflow.
Okay, interesting. So we want to talk about big picture, which we just talked about, and then kind of bleed into some of the ways that Microsoft Nuance is leading the AI charge in the healthcare space. Can you share us a little bit more about Nuance DAC and explain its technology and kind of dive into it a little bit further?
Yeah, it's so Nuance DAX is actually an application that was initially designed as something to address what is most clinicians will tell you is one of the top clinical challenges that we face, we have greatly improved our ability to gather and use data with the advent of sort of electronic health records, right? And in part of our, you know, as we take care of our patients. But at the same time, that documentation, that interaction with the EHR has started to become a bit of a burden for most clinicians. And when you ask clinicians, of course, now, despite the advantages that EHRs can provide, the clinical work tends to be more onerous, and there's a little bit less opportunity to actually go back to what we would call traditional or true patient care when we're sort of having to document all these different parts of the note. We're having to, you know, work with that system almost exclusively. A lot of people have even said that when they go to their doctor over the past, you know, 5-10 years or so, they start to see the doc looking less at them and looking more at the screen, right? Because they need to work with the EHR to take care of that patient. And so if you look at that as a problem and it's causing potential frustration for clinic, how do you tackle that? How do you get that work done, but at the same time allow the doctor to take care of the patient? So one solution to that is to leverage some of this AI that we sort of were referring to at the beginning, which is to say, if I could transcribe a conversation between a doctor and a patient, and then turn that transcription into the documentation for that clinician to then review and then sign, that could potentially save them quite a bit of time and effort and really bring them back to what they love to do, right? Which is to take care of patients. When that human connection can kind of be sort of reinvigorated. So that's kind of what the overall thesis of the DAX work has been. And, you know, yes, it's possible to sort of tackle components of that. Granted, you know, Nuance is a company that, you know, for the past 2+ decades has led the field in sort of automatic voice to text recognition, being able to understand medical terminology, being able to very faithfully transcribe conversations. But the challenge part is actually turning that transcription into a note, taking in all the context, putting in the correct information in the right places. To do that, you really do have to have some kind of medical knowledge, and it can't just be for one area. It has to be somewhat broad. And so until you know, these powerful models came about, such as GPT-4, which is a great example, you know, that transition from that transcript to a note had some challenges. And so now, though, that we have this ability to sort of leverage that large model that understands, I would say, the context, understands the sort of the reasoning that goes into composing that note, we have this really beautiful marriage of what is a core traditional technology that has been sort of refined over the decades, married with something that's, again, very brand new and very capable in order to achieve that goal. And again, I can't say enough of how positive the reaction has been to the solution and how excited we are to continue to roll this out for clinicians.
I mean, it all sounds great, and I'm a patient. As I mentioned to you, I'm a cancer survivor, and I remember, I recall that time when, you know, I did have a lot of one-to-one conversation, and then it quickly diminished into 7 minutes provider, and then there's a scribe even at one point within it. So I really appreciate like hearing that aspect of it. Have you guys seen any negative implementations with having this type of technology being put into the real world physician's office?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I, you know, is really important about the way this has been designed and the way that we're thinking about this is that this is very much what we would call a human in the loop solution. In other words, there's no part of this that the doctor is outside of the interaction of the model with the ultimate decision. So the doctor remains in control of that. So you pointed out that you know, you've been to physicians who've used human scribes. This is very akin to that, right? So it's a workflow that can automate some of that task. But then before any decisions are made, that note is reviewed, that expert remains in control in the loop. And that's really important as we start to think about that these systems aren't always perfect, and you can't possibly design a system for every possible, you know, edge case, as we call them. So that's why I think for us, it's so critical that these technologies kind of work together in concert with one another to augment the experts, to make them able to do something, make them more efficient, but still, of course, providing their ultimate guidance. as these solutions are rolled out. The other thing I'll mention too is, you know, as you can imagine, these technologies can be used in a variety of different ways, even for this use case. One of the most recent announcements is the work that we're doing with one of the largest EHR providers in the country, Epic. So another thing that really makes physicians frustrated and clinicians frustrated is when they have to use several different systems to have access to a new technology, right? So taking away that burden and actually implementing it, integrating it directly into the health system record that they already use is another key advantage, I think, of this technology. So you're using a solution you're already familiar with in terms of the, you know, the EHR interaction, but yet you're getting some, you know, efficiencies of scale because of the technology that we've built. And again, at the end of the day, we recognize that the physician or the clinician is always in control.
Gotcha. And that seems to lead into what my next question is, and you know, what type of guardrails are we ensuring are in place to make sure it doesn't go off the rails? Like, for no pun intended, but I said that. I mean, you definitely touched base on that with the human in the loop, process. But I think as we go forward, I mean, this is going to get gradually more and more comfortable with keeping that human element lesser and lesser and having them provide more of the one-on-one with the patient. What is being done at the levels of the Microsoft, the world, the global organizations to make sure that like our patients, Christ, you know, humankind, you know, is comfortable with AI, you know, getting more and more into their life?
Yeah, that's a very important question. I think it's something that everyone should think very carefully about, particularly as you can see when you have this application that, again, it's the fastest consumer application adoption in history, right? So you recognize that most of the world sees how this technology can potentially benefit them. As you take it into healthcare, there's, you know, clearly a level of risk tolerance that is very different from other applications. I think that's very easy to see. But beyond that, I think what's important is that there's another differentiating point. So whether it's healthcare, whether it's finance, whether it's some other consumer part of the market, we, as from the Microsoft perspective, invest a ton in what we call responsible AI. In fact, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of applications and team members who work specifically on responsible AI. And there's a very, very rigorous process for any application, whether it's healthcare or not. But then on top of that, what we've started to see as the Nuance brings this very specific domain expertise in working with consumer healthcare software, there's that additional layer of understanding of the use case, of understanding of what the barriers might be, and then of course what the expectations would be for performance. And I think all of that kind of comes together in this DAXIS Express is a wonderful example of all of those kind of wheels working in concert with one another to produce something that's really high impact, but also incredibly safe and effective.
Interesting. Okay. Now, Rafe, you know, we're kind of jumping into your space here now, talking a little bit into security protection. Tell me a little bit more about how AI is affecting your role in cybersecurity right now.
Sure, I'd be glad to. So, you know, all this technology is great, and we've acknowledged that, but it is also in the hands of the bad guys. There's a lot more for us to consider now in terms of keeping clients safe when it comes to cybersecurity, because you know now they have these tools at their disposal, and their attempts at exploiting all of the securities we put in place are now backed by this powerful AI technology. So you've got hackers doing things with their tools, and you know hackers have a tool set just like we all have tools that we use at work. They all have tools they use. It's not typically the guy in the hoodie sitting at a computer trying to hack through your firewall necessarily. They actually have their own marketplace to go buy, their weapons of choice, if you want to think about it that way. So those are all becoming more advanced thanks to AI. And some examples there, like I think we've all seen a phishing email at some point. And the dead giveaway for a phishing email used to be, it was poorly written, bad punctuation, bad grammar, probably looked like it was composed by someone that didn't understand our language that well. Well, now they they just go to ChatGPT and have it write the message, and it's perfectly formed. Sounds, you know, like it comes from an intelligent person. It's a lot more convincing. You know, that landscape is changing because we've got what used to be dead giveaways are no longer dead giveaways. They're using software right now that can deceive your system into making wrong decisions on security, because it's able to come in and kind of discover your environment, and it discovers your vulnerabilities faster than sometimes faster than old school defenses, defense tools can understand what just happened. So, so those are a few things. You know, we hear about smart malware now, which is malware that can come in and adapt to your environment, bypass some of your defenses, and more or less camp out and wait for the right opportunity to launch an attack. And then we have things emerging like deep fakes, which I don't know if you've, there's a famous deep fake on YouTube. The Tom Cruise deep fake was kind of one of the first ones out there, and it's still a great example. And I see now I've seen a lot about AI influencers, which are totally AI generated people out promoting products and things like that, and have followings of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. But I think what scares me the most out of all of this is that new deepfake technology, because it's becoming difficult to tell what is real anymore. I'm looking at a picture of Donald Trump riding a mountain bike on my computer that was totally AI generated. I've got an app on my phone that I just need to record your voice for 30 seconds, and then I can type in what I want the app to say, and it's going to speak in your voice. So you can see how that's a problem and a danger, because all I need is 30 seconds of the CEO's voice, and I could make calls around the office asking for financial maneuvers to be made, and, you know, checks written, bills paid, the fake invoices and things like that. And it's quickly reaching a point where, you know, we used to advise in the past, hey, if you get a call and someone's asking you to write a check, call that person back. Or if you get an email, you know, call that person and say, hey, did you send this email? I'm just, you know, this is kind of out of the ordinary. Now you can't even call them, because it could be a deep fake, you know, voice enhancer on the other end. So you're going to reach a point, you need to go in there and physically lay eyes on them to confirm things like this. So what are we doing on, you know, in the IT world? Of course, we're using AI to combat AI now. That's what it's kind of where we've arrived. So we have to use tools where the AI there is better than the AI the bad guys are using. So, phishing email detection with AI, malware detection, just any kind of automated threat intelligence that we can support with AI. And, you know, to one of the points Matt made earlier, we're not totally reliant on AI. I mean, it has its place in terms of detecting things, but we still incorporate a human into that mix too. So where we're seeing the benefits of AI is, if you take a typical office network, there are thousands of events taking place in a matter of minutes, and it's nearly impossible for a human to monitor that. So we use AI tools that are looking for anomalies, you know, things that just look out of the ordinary, to alert a human to take a closer look. And these tools enable us to be a better watchdog over those environments. With that power of AI. So we still, you know, you still need a human in the mix, because the human's going to bring insight, experience, just kind of a general level of wisdom and knowledge about something that, you know, looks dangerous. Let's have a person look at it and confirm it's dangerous. In terms of what you can do, because, you know, this is all new and scary and fascinating at the same time, but just to make sure that you're in a mindset of staying protected and awareness there. So you want to work with someone. It could be your own internal IT guys or someone that you outsource your IT to, but you want to make sure that you keep all your software updated regularly, stay informed of the latest threats, and that's best done through some kind of training program. And you know, if you're a practice administrator, you want to make sure that your staff members are doing the training. So most of these training programs now have a way to track that. Make sure you're implementing this advanced threat detection. Make sure you're backing up your data on a regular basis. I mean, you need to be obsessive compulsive over backing up your data. That is your recourse when something happens, is you go to your last backup, or you go to your last good backup, I should say, which they should all be good. And you know, turning on things like multi-factor authentication and you know, using a password manager, things like that, just to keep up with all the stuff that the bad guys are doing. You know, we have a saying in our industry that, you know, firewall is no longer a complete security strategy, and it never was. But there's a lot of misconception out there that, oh, we've got a firewall, we're good. You know, that is not the way to look at it anymore. So there's a lot more to having a complete solution. But some of those things I mentioned are now, you know, requirements. And interestingly, and I'll kind of wrap it up with this, being in healthcare, you're particularly a target because if we look at the dark web and, you know, whenever there's a data breach and patient records, client records, whatever, are stolen, a lot of times that information goes for sale on the dark web. It's not necessarily used by the people that stole it. They look at it as an asset. Hey, I can go sell this list of accounts on the dark web. Well, last time I looked at any numbers, let's just say, Steve and I got your name, address, birthday, and social security number. I found that for sale on the dark web. It's worth about $5. I know I've personally felt insulted when I heard that. Like, what? Only $5? That's like, I thought that's what they were after. Contrast that to adding your medical records. If I've got that info in your medical records, your file is now worth about $300 to $400 on the dark web, because that is what makes you unique. And there's all sorts of ways they can use that to steal your identity and do other things. So knowing that EPHI is the most valuable item for sale on dark web, you know, adds an extra target to your back if you're in healthcare. So keep it protected, and you know, training is the best defense right now. Just being aware of what's out there.
Okay, yeah, that's it's good information to hear, and I think that's a good segue into, you know, kind of talking locally now. You know, during our research to get this podcast up and running on AI, you know, I think presumptuously we thought that our local healthcare practice managers and executives and physicians were using AI more so than they were. So I think it's a technology that's just starting to trickle down locally. And as a marketer, I mean, we are using it with some of our clients for, you know, basic stuff like social media posts, job posting, and stuff like that. But I guess, you know, I'd like to start with Matt first of, like, you know, from the Microsoft Nuance perspective, like, what can our practice managers and our physicians expect locally with the future with AI? I know we talked about DAX a little bit, but what else do you envision, you know, locally coming down the pipeline?
No, it's a great question. I think, you know, from the Microsoft perspective, we really are laser focused on I guess the core mission, which has, you know, been true for since before generative AI, which is, you know, to basically empower everyone on the planet to achieve more. But that is so much more in sight and visible with these technologies. So can we provide the capabilities that allow other companies, the customers themselves to achieve the things in their lives that they're looking to do. And so the list is pretty long of even some of the what you would call short-term capabilities that we've seen folks use. We did have a large healthcare provider group that we had a session with, and I think at the end of only a 40-minute portion of that meeting, there were over 300 different use cases that folks had been sort of talking about, brainstorming. Is this something that's possible to do? And so it's really, how do we provide an ecosystem, to some of the points made about security that Rafe made? It has to be secure. It has to be, state of the art. It has to be integrated, as I was talking about earlier, into systems that healthcare systems use already. But it has to be performant for a variety of different stakeholders and use cases. There's all kinds of parts of the healthcare ecosystem that are going to benefit from the capabilities that these technologies provide. And another thing that I typically point out is, as you start to see what you might refer to as sort of these co-pilots, is as they're often called, which are these large models that are kind of, acting as assistants for things like your email or your Word documents or your PowerPoints or all of the applications that you use outside of, your healthcare life. I think that we're all going to start feeling more accustomed and comfortable in just having a sense, sort of a natural gut feeling of the capabilities and potentially where you wouldn't use them, and taking that sort of feeling into other areas, right, of your day to day, is going to feel like even a bigger gap if we aren't able to provide some of those baseline capabilities to folks in their daily life. I think the best analogies I've heard are, the things like the internet, right? A lot of people had a lot of debate as to how this would impact society and our daily lives, and now we don't think about it. I think the same maybe could be said for smartphones, where, how am I going to type? There's no keyboard, all that. Like, what am I doing with all these applications? And, obviously we don't think about it at all now. I think there's going to be a similar kind of wave of, what is this technology? How does it impact my daily life? How can I use it to do the things that I want to do? And then eventually it's just going to become, I think, something that you feel is natural. But I will point out that if you don't have that, the gap will feel pretty stark. And so I encourage everyone who's thinking about this or listening to this to really get comfortable, start to experiment with it, think, interact with the system. That's one of the beautiful things about this technology. Is it's, as democratized as probably any new technology that I've seen in a long time in terms of, the ability to access and use it. And as that comfort level starts to, proceed, I think you're going to see a lot of folks saying, oh, okay, well, there's this part of my day-to-day that this application could really help me on. Okay, great. Well, what are the tools that I need? Where are the, what are the systems that I need to make that possible? And that's kind of where you kind of see this sort of Microsoft nuance story really coming in, because how can we provide the tools and capabilities to the healthcare ecosystem to allow them to use these tools safely and effectively? That's kind of what we're laser focused on.
Interesting. That's great. And when you're talking about, the technologies and bringing them to the fore, just game changers for the generations. You're talking about the internet, just brings me up to when Katie Couric on the Today Show back in the 90s, having that moment of what's the internet? What's the most important? Who cares about the internet? And now it's ubiquitous with our life today. One thing, and I want to transition into one more question to you, Matt, and then I think there'll be a good segue into Ray from there. One thing we haven't talked about is cost. Or value of AI. And honestly, I don't know how to tee it up other than I'm interested to learn more about, what type of cost benefits could, practice managers be interested in, knowing that AI can be coming on. I'm sure there's a big upfront cost to onboard, but long term, there has to be some benefits to it.
Yeah, no, it's a very important consideration, because, imagine that you did have, let's say, several dozen or more potential use cases of where you would like to potentially apply. you have to think about things in terms of value. And then obviously, you know, in healthcare, I would probably add another axis to that and say risk as well, right? Like, what is the risk profile for this use case that I'm envisioning? And I think as you start to do that, you'll start to get a pretty good sense of, you know, where you can prioritize things and get some impact. I do think on the topic of cost, just basically looking at cost, as you've already seen these models, even from, you know, again, just having been released less than a year ago, the costs have dropped precipitously. And I think that will continue to happen, right? As these models continue to be rolled out, there's obviously efficiencies that can be gained. There's an active areas of research to make these things more performant, less computationally expensive, et cetera. And then you're going to start to see folks that are able to shape these models, so to speak, leveraging their own unique data to, you know, to really sort of be just for their use cases. And in doing so, that model may become more efficient and more cost effective. So there's I see that kind of like that general trend. I mean, if you remember, you know, if you go back and look at, you know, the computer, the evolution of the computer, you look at Moore's law, just sort of the way that curve just bends down in a way that you don't think about really the cost of it compared to the way you might have thought about it in, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. I think that's sort of maybe even on a more accelerated pace than before. But again, it's really looking, what is the value? Like what is the use case delivering for you? And are you truly getting a return on the investment for that at the enterprise level? So imagine that you're a large health system. You really have to start thinking about, well, there are so many use cases and I have so many different stakeholders in my ecosystem that it does maybe make sense at that point to say, I need to have an enterprise-wide plan and be able to provide these capabilities to my ecosystem to allow them to make those value judgments, right, at every level of the enterprise. And so there may be economies of scale for just setting up an infrastructure that allows the broader ecosystem to use these tools safely and effectively. And that's at least how I see the next sort of wave of this kind of moving forward, is really, can we provide, like I was saying before, provide that capability in a way that gets folks to the point where they're able to just start tackling the use cases that they have in mind.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I'm glad that teed up the way I was hoping it would, because Rafe, you know, coming, you know, from here, from the value and the costs and, you know, the infrastructure being set up in place to deliver these mediums, you know, on the IT and cybersecurity side of this, you know, let's talk about the last mile start of the AI application. Like, how do you envision, you know, this type of product being delivered into the healthcare space?
Great question. So I guess maybe it's best answered by just a quick explanation of how we engage with our healthcare clients. So we do a lot with private practice, for example. So for most of those clients, we honestly, it's nothing they're really going to have to worry about. And I'll explain why is we come in and act as their IT department, just, you know, using us as an example. And whoever your MSP is, I mean, that's their role, is they come in and act as if they're your IT department. So it's going to be a matter of those guys adopting these tools as their technology or cybersecurity stack. They love to use that term, stack. But so it's a matter of them using those tools. And I would say it's a conversation. Because you really need to interview these people, your IT people, on a regular basis. We recommend at least a couple times a year, we call it the virtual CIO role. So you should work with someone that acts in that CIO type capacity for you and understands what's new, what's coming. How are we going to respond to that? What are we putting in place to keep you protected? And without getting into the technical weeds of, non-English type of conversations you might have with IT people, like acronym soup, just an assurance that, hey, we're using the You know, we're using the best tools out there. You know, are they heavily invested in their tool set? And that's a great question for them. Is ask your IT provider, hey, what is the best thing you've done lately to ensure our protection against all these new advanced threats? And just listen to their response. Ask them, how are you defending me against all this new AI, cybersecurity, all these threats that are out there now? Because from an end user point of view, you know, you're putting a lot of trust into the provider. It's just like me going to a doctor, right? I don't know how the X-ray machine works. I don't know how to read an X-ray. How do I know that he's giving me the best advice and diagnosis and recommended treatment plan and all this? I'm having to put trust into this person. So I think that kind of sums it up. You're just going to have to get that warm, fuzzy feeling that these people are proving that they're taking care of you in the best way. And I'll tell you a great way to do that, if you want to kind of get a third party review, is find someone that'll offer you a free penetration test. Those are often quite revealing. It'll uncover any kind of security holes that might be out there. It's something we offer, for example, to prospective clients, existing clients, and you can find those out there. Or, you know, if you want to spend the $3,000 to $5,000 plus to have it a more thorough test performed, there are companies out there that provide those as well. And it's a good idea to do it anyway, probably at least annually. And you know, you can have it run by an independent, you know, or third party, take the results through your current IT provider and go, okay, you know, here's some things this scan found. What can you do to, you know, shore this up so that we don't have these security issues hanging out there?
Gotcha. Well, great. Well, thanks. And, you know, gentlemen, on my end, you know, those were the major topic points that I wanted to try to cover during this conversation. I'd like to just, you know, give you guys a few moments just to kind of wrap it up. You know, any final thoughts? You know, I'm looking back at my script that I had to start off with, and the last thing I said before I went into my awesome Jerry Seinfeld impersonation was, how can we ensure a comfortable and confident experience for our patients, physicians, and their organizations engaging with AI? You know, I think that is going to be, obviously, that is the overlying crux of, one, why we're here today, and you know, why we're trying to bring more transparency with it. So with that in mind, you know, I'd like to, you know, see if you guys have any parting words on that. Matt, do you have anything?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just really want to emphasize that this is a very exciting time. I've been in AI and healthcare for close to 20 years, believe it or not. And I've never been more hopeful and optimistic. I'm really excited for what these capabilities will bring to healthcare. And I'm really glad that we've got people, I think, on both sides of the aisle, from the technology companies, but also the clinicians, providers, other ecosystem players in healthcare, that are really leaning in and working on solving significant use case challenges that we have in healthcare. I'm seeing really, really positive growth here for everyone involved. So I definitely would encourage everyone to get comfortable with the technology, play with it, learn about it. The barrier to entry to this has never been lower, which I think will bring more people into the conversation. And that's exactly what we need, from, you know, the top docs and the CEOs all the way down to, you know, the folks working in the back office to, you know, even our patients, right? We really need to have everyone that's participating in the healthcare ecosystem understand to some extent what these capabilities will do for us, but then also help guide us into the things that really need to be tackled. So I'm excited.
Great. And appreciate your time. Rafe, what about you? Anything? Any last parting thoughts?
I totally agree with everything Matt just said. And I would say, again, you know, this technology's here. It's as significant as the launch of the internet. I mean, we'll look back in years to come and, you know, Oh, hey, remember when AI was new? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So embrace it. Get familiar with the tech. I mean, it's as easy as going to the ChatGPT site, creating an account, and just experiment with it. I would encourage you to, you know, have a conversation with ChatGPT, and this whole idea of context, that is your one of your keys to success and being successful with AI, is understanding how important context is to AI. So, but just, you know, you can begin using it with just routine office tasks, you know, create an email response, craft up an inner office memo, or have it review a policy, send a nasty letter to whoever. I mean, just get your hands in there and get dirty and start to embrace it.
Great. Well, again, gentlemen, I want to thank you again for your time. It has been really informative, and I know our members will really, really benefit from this. Just one last thing. Titles are Dr. Matthew Lundgren, Chief Medical Information Officer at Microsoft Nuance, and Rafe Martin, Chief Revenue Officer, Cybersecurity and Managed Services at Comtech. Gentlemen, again, I want to thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to doing this again. Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the NCMGMA podcast and being part of our community. If you enjoyed today's discussion, please consider subscribing to stay updated and share our podcast with your colleagues who might find it valuable. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. We look forward to bringing you more valuable insights in future episodes and wish you continued success in your healthcare management journey.